Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
That's particularly apropos today, isn't it? The underneath all the rain, snow, sleet, and ice, there's the rose, and that's our theme today. By the way, I'm just doing a new thing this week, that is sitting down for the sermon. It doesn't mean I've got so old now I can't get up anymore. But I thought it's like an antidote to the hyperkinetic Paul that sometimes rushes around, you know. So we'll see what it's like. I wasn't sure what I'm going to do with my feet at 9:30. Somebody said you could tap dance with them, but I ended up, it was fine. I didn't need to rush around with my feet while I sat on this chair. We're going to look at a number of poems and scriptures or sacred texts around the theme of today, which is a beautiful theme, the rose and the lotus. You know, the rose is in the West is the sort of the symbolic flower of spiritual growth and blossoming and enlightenment, and then in the equivalent in the East, it's the lotus, the same idea. And the key theme here, of course, is blossoming. Right? How do we blossom? How, in the midst of all the difficulties of our lives, do we blossom? And I was thinking this week how this community blossoms over and over again. You know, that we put out the call that we needed some extra funds to sustain us through. And we had a wonderful, for those of us who were here, you can attest to this. We had a wonderful potluck, didn't we? The food was excellent, good energy. And we brought in, what I think, over $19,000 last week. So thank you, God. And to me, that's testimony to the fact we love our community, they want to sustain it, keep it going. And we affirm that level of provision, you know, getting those $12,000 a week that we need to sustain us is reasonable and is what it takes to sustain all the ministries that happen here. Because we want this community to blossom like the rose, like the lotus. So beautiful images. They both have commonalities, don't they? They both come out of the mud, in the case of the lotus, or the dirt, in the case of the rose, right? So in that symbology, we come from the ordinary, and you could say the mean, the earthy, the darkness, and yet they both blossom into the sky, into all possibility. So very much like us, we come from humble earthly origins, but we have a spiritual connection. We have a spiritual essence. And yeah, the rose has thorns and the lotus has mud, but it's that's not really what we're focusing on. What we're focusing on is in the midst of, in spite of all the thorns and the difficulty and the muddy background of our backstory, if you like, there's this possibility of blossom. So that's what I want to ask as we go through some of these scriptures and poems is, how do we blossom in our lives? By the way, anybody ever watched the movie The English Patient? You know that movie? It's an old one now. It's from back in the 90s. And Wendy had never seen it, so I said, hey, you got to see this movie. Well, I shouldn't have done that because I was blubbering all the way through the thing. Very sad, very, very sad romantic movie. But it also taught me how amazingly, or it reminded me, it didn't teach me, it reminded me how amazingly paradoxical life is, yeah? We have so much beauty, so much possibility, so much amazement, and so much terror and fear and horror, and yet we must marry the two together if we are to bloom, yeah? And that seems to be the key here. I cannot bloom if I'm not real, if I'm not in the mud, but I also cannot bloom if all I can think of is the mud, the pain and the difficulty. I have to come out of the mud and blossom in the air of joy. So let's start off with the Bible. It's always a good place to start, isn't it? And one of my favorite books of the Bible, not very religious book, you could say, but highly spiritual, is the Song of Songs. And So many of these poems, by the way, they seem to be about human love, romantic love, passion. And I think that is, there's a good reason for that, is many of the poems about spirit invite us to be as passionate about spirit, about our spiritual connection with the truth of us, as we are with our love partners, right? There's a direct correlation there between the two. And you cannot get spirit cooking in your life if you are sort of lukewarm about it. We have to be passionate about it. Hence all these poems of passion that are really speaking to the, not just to the love in our life, the love person, but to our own relationship with our own divinity, coming to love ourselves and the reality of ourselves, the beauty of ourselves. So the woman says in chapter 2, I'm a rose of the Sharon Plain, a lily of the valley. Like a lily among thorn bushes, so is my dearest among the young women. Like an apple tree among the wild trees, so is my lover among the young men. In his shade, I take pleasure in sitting, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. He has brought me to the house of wine, and his banner raised over me is love. And let's focus just on those two lines. He has brought me to the house of wine. In other words, the place of what? Celebration, isn't it? To the place of joy and possibility, and his banner raised over me is love. Now, I love this image. You know, do we do that for the ones we love? Do we see over them a banner, and the name on the banner is love? Yeah? Because what, if we do, what are we doing when we put that banner over the ones we love? What's happening when we do that? We're honoring them. That's the first thing. We're lifting them up into that love consciousness. There's a protective aspect too, isn't it? We're protecting them. We're surrounding them with that protection of love. Yeah? And I love that idea, because when I can do that for somebody else, I am ennobled too. Because when I can put that banner of love, and I invite us, this is part of the process, not just to do it to the ones we love, because that's relatively easy, but to do it to everyone we meet, right? Put the banner of love over them. So I'm not just seeing a person there. I'm seeing an expression of love, yes? And what happens to that person then? They become ennobled. I see more in that person than I would if I didn't put the banner of love over them. And what about if we put the banner of love over our enemies? See? I can't see them quite in the same light anymore. I see them for who they truly are, right? With this banner of possibility. They say, imagine your enemies as babies. It's easier to put the banner of love over them. And I've tried that many times. It does work. Because it's hard to be so darn upset with them when you see them as goo-coo-coo-ee bill babies. Before they became the sons of guns they are today. So whatever it takes to imagine the beauty, the banner of love. In the East, of course, the symbol of the lotus is very powerful. They talk about the thousand-petaled lotus that blossoms at the top of our head as part of the chakra system. And it's this idea that this is our divine connection with the infinite. And although that connection is everywhere, it's kind of cool that it's right here at the top of our head. It's that divine cord that links us to the everything, yeah? But it's also in the East is the feet are considered to be divine, the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is from top to toe is the idea of this blossoming of something beautiful. And in the East, they do a lot of worship of the lotus feet of the Lord. You know, they talk about the feet, touching the feet. And we can think, well, that's kind of weird. You know, it's humbling ourselves. But what it really is seeing that the divine is throughout everything, right? And we're beholding it, we're touching it. Here's another thing. Jesus healed in various ways. One of the most beautiful healing sequences in the Bible, I think, is where the woman who was hemorrhaging, you remember this story, touched the hem of his garment and got healed, right? Didn't hug him, didn't get a huge healing from him outwardly, she just touched the hem of his garment. But power was there. It was her passion. She wanted to reach out and touch him. And I would suggest this is how we connect with the divine within ourselves and within the universe, is that we have to make passionate contact with it, right? Otherwise, it's just an intellectual game, isn't it? So how do you personalize God? Listen to Ramakrishna as he's talking about this. This is page 155. He's talking about the difference between intellectual knowledge or ideas about things and how it's made real. He says, in the light of Vedantic reasoning, Vedanta is pretty much like unity. It's a very similar unitive teaching. In the light of unity reasoning, Brahman, the great god, the godhead, has no attributes. The real nature of Brahman cannot be described. But so long as your individuality is real in you, as it is in most of us, the world is also real. And equally real are the different forms of God and the feeling that God is a person. Yours is the path of devotion. That's very good. It's an easy path. Who can fully know the infinite gods? And what need is there of knowing the infinite? Having attained this rare human birth, the supreme need is to develop love for the lotus feet of God. The supreme need is to develop love for the lotus feet of God. Now, what does that mean for you? What does it mean to touch the lotus feet of God? It means to have a personal connection with the divine. I shared on Wednesday night that my personal connection to the divine is keenly in nature. So when I look at a tree, when I'm involved with the cycle of the seasons, I feel alive. I feel connected to the divine. I feel connected to some order of the universe, yeah? But I think all of us have to find the way that works for us. I love Jesus. I don't love about Jesus, but I love Jesus. You know, there's a lot of stuff about Jesus that ticks me off. But the real Jesus, the Jesus that I read in the Gospels, the cool Zen master Jesus, is really somebody I feel very much warmth towards. And I can resonate with his words, and they're real for me. I can live them because of that. But not because I like it's a nice idea, but no, it feels good here. So in what ways do we connect with the divine? See, I think it's a rhetorical question. We have to ask ourselves, what does it for me, right? What's going to make me live from that context, yeah? So think about that for a moment. Let's read the next one. In the Buddhist tradition, there's something called the Pure Land, especially in Pure Land Buddhists. And they have this beautiful imagery of this heavenly state. But this heavenly state really isn't after we die. It's now. It's the perfection within us all. And there's some cool images here, so that's why I wanted to share it, okay? So don't think this is some kind of idealized state. No, this is the reality of us when we let go of all the things we think are so important and let the spiritual glory that's within us express. So it says this. This world system of the Lord Amitabha, Amitabha just simply means boundless light. The spirit is boundless light. I am the light of the world, says God. Says God speaking through Jesus, right? It's the same image. This world system of Lord Amitabha is rich and prosperous, comfortable, fertile, and delightful. And in this world system, there are no hells. This is a unity system, obviously. There is no hell. And none of the inauspicious places of rebirth. You know, that's what I hate, is those inauspicious places of rebirth. Don't you? I do not want to go to an inauspicious place of rebirth. Keep me away from it. I only want the auspicious. And that world system emits many fragrant odors. It is rich in a great variety of flowers and fruits, adorned with jewel trees, which are frequented by flocks of various birds with sweet voices. This is a cool place. On all sides, it is surrounded with golden nets, and all around covered with lotus flowers made of all the precious things. Some of the lotus flowers are half a mile in circumference. Big lotus flower. Others up to 10 miles in circumference. This reminds me of some kind of Beatles movie or something, you know, the LSD kind of, I'm tripping here on these magnificent lotuses, man. Yeah. And from each jewel, I'm telling you, this is the Buddha speaking here. This is 2,500 years ago. Amazing, isn't it? And from each jewel lotus issues 3,600,000 million rays of light. And at the end of each ray, there issue 3,600,000 millions of Buddhas with golden-colored bodies. And many kinds of rivers flow along in this world system up to 50 miles broad and 12 miles deep. How do they come up with these numbers, I wonder? But it sounds just like Revelation. You know, in Revelation, it talks about the river of life with the trees, with the leaves for healing of the nations. And this says, and both the banks of those great rivers are lined with various scented jewel trees. And those rivers flow along with golden sand at the bottom. And all the wishes those beings may think of, they will all be fulfilled as long as they are rightful. And everyone hears the pleasant sound he wishes for to hear. And the beings do not eat gross food like soup or raw sugar. See, even back then they knew, man, they knew. But whatever food they may wish for that they perceive as eaten, they will become gratified in body and mind without there being any further need to throw the food into the body. So just thinking about those delicious foods is enough. And then it goes on and on and on. I don't know what's wrong with soup. It was fatty soup. It was full of, cream and stuff probably, right? Yeah, you know, those bad soups. You know, you can get La Madeleine soup. They're so delicious. Buddha, don't eat at Madeleines. But I love the imagery there because what it's saying, and St. Paul invited us to say the same, didn't he? He said, whatever things are noble, just, kind, et cetera, what? Think on those things, yes? In other words, what you get in your life is what you're focusing on. So I'd rather focus on very large lotuses, you know, myself. No, I'd rather focus on all the possibilities of good in my life and in everybody else's life. I'd rather see the banner of love than the banner of impossibility, you know, misery, sorrow, sadness. I want to see what's glorious and wonderful, yes? And I think that scripture invites us into that worldview. What's your worldview? We said last week, what's on your sign? Because whatever's on your sign, that's where you're going, right? So if you put up really negative stuff on your sign, then that's your destination. So if you put up something as beautiful as this, then we're moving into a much better place. It doesn't always work out quite so well, so I want to read some D.H. Lawrence. D.H. Lawrence, you know, what a great writer he was. He was only 45 when he died, wrote 11 novels, a huge amount of short stories, books and books of poetry, traveled the world. He wrote a book in New Mexico, another one in Mexico, another one in Australia. Great, passionate writer. He was always wanting to be loved more fully, and it never seemed to happen for him. But he poured out his passion. Talk about passion. He had a lot of passion. Came from a working-class background. And this one is called Lotus and Frost. How many times, like lotus lilies risen upon the surface of the waters, there have risen floating on the blood, on my blood, the rare soft glimmers of desire escaped from prison. So I am clothed all over with the light and sensitive bud-like blossoming of passion, till naked for her in the finest fashion, the flowers of all my mud swim into sight. And then I offer all myself unto this woman who likes to love me. But she turns a look of hatred on the flower that burns to break and pour her out its precious dew. And slowly all the blossom shuts in pain, and all the lotus buds of love sink over to die unopened, when this moon-faced lover, kind on the weight of suffering, smiles again. Those moments where we've got unrequited love. Yeah, we've all been there. And we can feel that way on the spiritual path, too. It doesn't always work out the way we wanted. You know, we extended, but it didn't happen. So how do we get through that, folks? How do we get through those moments where we just want to shrink back into our bud, where we don't end up blossoming? Somebody said at 9:30, yeah, keep on keeping on. Have faith, right? Don't let that become your reality. I think it's key. Just because that person didn't return your love doesn't mean I can't still hold the banner of love over them, yeah? Because if I don't, if I, in my cynicism, withdraw the banner, who suffers? I do, right? So I have to stay open no matter what. If you've got another idea about how to keep going through that, tell me, you know, what is it that sustains you through? remember who you really are. I don't need this outer circumstance to change, right? I am who I am. I have that lotus field of all possibility in me, yeah? And that is the truth of my being. And love will be requited if I live from that context. Yes. Yeah. Sure, that's right. Isn't that the imagery of the lotus, the imagery of the rose, right? They both are in the mud, in the dirt, but they blossom into the sky. But they're not floating above the earth. They're connected to it. They're in the watery depths, in the lotus's case, right? But coming out from it. And they're giving it the light touch. They're floating on the surface of things. They're not underneath it. They're floating. They're buoyant. Let's move to St. John of the Cross, one of the great Catholic mystics, you know, and talk about passion. And you'd think this was a poem to a lover again, but really it's to his inner soul and his communion with himself. And one of the great mystical poets, he interprets the whole poem in the rest of the book, The Ascent of Mount Carmel. But I'll just give you the poem today. He says, "O guiding night, O night more lovely than the dawn, O night that has united the lover and his beloved, transforming the beloved in her lover. Upon my flowering breast, which I kept wholly for him alone, there he lay sleeping, and I caressing him there in a breeze from the fanning cedars. When the breeze blew from the turret, parting his hair, he wounded my neck with his gentle hand, suspending all my senses. I abandoned and forgot myself, laying my face on my beloved. All things ceased. I went out from myself, leaving my cares forgotten among the lilies." There's the lilies again. But I love that particular line. All things ceased. See, what happened? I gave up thinking that all the peripheral stuff was that important. Yeah, all the ways I have to fix things. All that ceased, and I went out from myself. What? I gave up thinking I was so cool, you know. I gave up thinking it's all about me, you know, all the time, you know, my ego. And instead I realized it's all about the all, yeah. It's about everything. It's beautiful. It's wondrous. I went out from myself, and it's in that moment I could leave all my cares forgotten amongst the lilies, you know. Doesn't matter anymore because I've seen something more important. When you're in love for the first time, and we do that many times in our lives, it's like nothing exists apart from that connection with the love, with the beloved, yeah? Well, that's not always the healthiest kind of love, but it speaks to that kind of focus that we have when we remember that that is all that matters, and everything else takes care of itself. Well, imagine that same kind of intensity focused on the Spirit within us, see? Then we're really beginning to put our priorities in the right way, aren't we? Not if you agree. Good. This is deep stuff. Another one, Mary Oliver. I think Mary Oliver is probably one of the greatest modern spiritual poets, and I love her because she's very down to earth and is able to bring things forth in very ordinary, seemingly ordinary language. And this one is about roses late summer. She says, "What happens to the leaves after they turn red and golden and fall away? What happens to the singing birds when they can't sing any longer? What happens to their quick wings? Do you think there is any personal heaven for any of us? Do you think anyone, the other side of that darkness, will call to us, meaning us, beyond the trees? The foxes keep teaching their children to live in the valley. So they never seem to vanish. They're always there in the blossom of light that stands up every morning in the dark sky. And over one more set of hills along the sea, the last roses have opened their factories of sweetness." Like that, factories of sweetness. and are giving it back to the world. If I had another life, I would want to spend it all on some unstinting happiness. I would be a fox or a tree full of waving branches, and I wouldn't mind being a rose in a field full of roses. Fear has not yet occurred to them, nor ambition. Reason they have not yet thought of. Neither do they ask how long they must be roses, and then what? Or any other foolish question. Isn't that great? Fear has not yet occurred to them, nor ambition. Reason they have not yet thought of. Neither do they ask how long they must be roses, and then what? Because we all do, don't we? How long is this going to go on? What's going to happen to me when I die? Oh, my God, I'm getting older. You know, what's it going to be like, et cetera, et cetera. All that worrying about stuff instead of being what? Present to what is, right? Present to the now. And that's the gift the rose gives us. It's just a rose. It's beautifully a rose regardless of what's going on, yeah? It's going to give itself to the night. It's going to be the fragrance. Wouldn't it be great if just for one day we could be that fragrant? And that's the thing I ask myself over and over. I don't want my children or my grandchildren to ever say to me, you know, Daddy, Granddaddy, were you ever alive? You know, did you ever have fun? Did you ever enjoy yourself? Because I want to be able to say, yes, I did. I was alive. I am alive. You know, because isn't that the greatest terror that we could ever have is living a half life, yeah? Not being passionate, listen, if you're going to watch The English Patient, blubber, it's okay. That's what you do when you watch a sad, sad movie like that. I can just think about it now. It's okay, but then don't live your life from that context either. You know, the movie's over. We're back to joy again. It's great. Okay, Rumi, probably the greatest of all, isn't he? What a wonderful... And by the way, Rumi was a Muslim. Let's put it out there. He was a Muslim. So not everything about Islam is bad, folks. Islam gave us Rumi. This one's from the teachings of Rumi by Andrew Harvey. He's been to our church a number of times. Great man, polymath, great insights, very passionate, and a good translator of Rumi, I think. This one's called Rose Garden After Rose Garden. Lovers know there are roses in the bloody veil of love. They live astounded by love's matchless beauty. The intellect says the six directions are blocked. Love says, there's a way. I've taken it thousands of times. Intellect sees a market and starts to haggle. Love sees thousands of markets beyond that market. How many mystic martyrs hidden in love's soul have abandoned the preacher's chair to climb onto the scaffold? Not quite sure I'm ready for the scaffold quite yet, but I get his point. Lovers who drink the wine's dregs reel from bliss to bliss. Dark-hearted skeptics burn inwardly with denial. Intellect says, stay where you are. Annihilation has only thorns. Love laughs. The thorns are in you. Keep silent and tear being's thorn out of your hearts. Discover in your own soul rose garden after rose garden. Ooh, I love it. Because that's what's in us all, isn't it? Is rose garden after rose garden. Giant lotuses of love. And finally, I just want to read from Four Quartets by T.S. Eliot, because this is right at the end of the Four Quartets from his fourth one, which is called Little Gidding, and there's some famous lines in here. I think we're all familiar with them, but really it's the climax, it's the apotheosis of what we're talking about, of the marrying of the blossoming of possibility with our passion, because that's what that's the way that we're really going to see transformation in our lives. And well, let's read it and then we'll talk a little bit about it. It says, we shall not cease from exploration. And the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. Through the unknown remembered gate when the last of earth left to discover is that which was the beginning. At the source of the longest river, the voice of the hidden waterfall and the children in the apple tree, not known because not looked for, but heard, half heard, in the stillness between two waves of the sea. Quick now, here, now, always. A condition of complete simplicity, costing not less than everything. And all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well, when the tongues of flame are enfolded into the crowned knot of fire and the rose are one. Now that's mystical poetry at its height, I think. And it's beautiful. A condition of absolute simplicity. What is that about? It means whatever is mine to do at any given time, I must do it to the fullest extent. Yeah? Whatever it is. If I'm fixing a meal, if I'm loving the person I'm with, if I'm driving a car, I do it. I'm present to it. It's the utterly simple one thing to do. We've all seen City Slickers. We all remember Jack Palance on the horse saying one thing. That's the most spiritually profound movie ever created, folks. City Slickers. You never knew it, did you? But he was so true. He was so right. It's the one thing, a condition of complete simplicity, costing not less than everything. In other words, all the other nonsense must go, right? When I'm doing that one thing, that's the only thing that matters. When I'm beholding the banner of love in you, what else matters? Nothing, except my connection to you at that moment. Then all shall be well. All manner of things shall be well when the tongues of flame are enfolded into the crown knot of fire, and the fire and the rose are one, right? My blossoming of possibility and my passion about being present to that blossoming is one thing. When I'm totally here and enjoying the ride, I may be going to hell in a bucket, to quote the Grateful Dead, but at least I'm enjoying the rides, you know. And these poems inspire us, don't they, to live from that wonderful context. So I hope there's something we heard from those mystic poets today that'll help us put that banner of love around ourselves, our loved ones, and wherever we go, and therefore live that blessed life. And so it is.
Thank you for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at www.unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We thank you for your contribution and affirm with you, divine love flowing through us blesses and multiplies all that we give and all that we receive.